Okay, good morning, everybody. Sorry to break up all the wonderful conversations. This week's Parsha, Parsha's Vayeshev, is a time perhaps for us to look into an issue which to me was very interesting, and I hope it's interesting to you as well. We have a big focus in our Parsha on dreams. This is the beginning when Yosef HaTzadik starts having his dreams, and not only does he have dreams, but he has dreams to the point that Yaakov Avinu says, "Va'aviv shamar es hadavar." Yaakov Avinu is waiting around to see what's going to turn out, what's going to be with the dreams of his son, and it seems to be taken pretty seriously. Not only that, you go to next week's Parsha, Parsha's Miketz, and we have the dreams of Paro, and we have the dreams of the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofim, and they also seem to be taken pretty seriously. And this is something, it's a recurrent theme that we have throughout Sefer Bereishis, which is an interesting thing to note. We have Yaakov Avinu has a dream when he goes and he falls asleep at the Makom HaMikdash, and he sees Malach Elokim, and he sees angels that are going up and down the ladder, and he has some sort of vision, and that vision is something that we take very seriously. It's something that we really refer back to. We have the story in Daniel, for those who learn Tanakh, we have the story in Daniel about Nebuchadnezzar, who has some sort of dream as well, and he's going so crazy that nobody, he knew he had a dream, he knew that something happened, he knew that he was shaken up, but he didn't remember exactly what transpired, what took place in his dream. And the Psukim tell us in Daniel Parak Dalet, interestingly, that he went ahead and he killed out all of the Chachmei Bavel because nobody was able to tell him what took place in his dream. That's how afraid he was. And he said, until somebody is able to explain it to him and give him some sort of understanding as to what took place last night in his dream, he wasn't willing to let anybody live until Daniel, who was blessed enough to have Ruach HaKodesh, went along and said, look what's happening here. And he asked God for special divine intervention here, and all of a sudden God gives him a revelation, tells him what took place in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and Nebuchadnezzar allowed Daniel to stay alive. And you see, obviously, we have the story of Paro, the story of Avimelech. Many different people, many different characters in Tanakh, throughout Tanakh, have dreams. And it would seem from all of this that dreams is something that we should probably take pretty seriously. Not only that, we have a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara says in Brachas as well, based on a Pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar, where we're told, Bachalom Adaberbo, says the Gemara, which is the first entry on the source sheet, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God tells us, Af al pisha hastarti panei mahem, even though I have in some way hidden my face from the people in a time when there's no Beis HaMikdash, even so, says the Gemara, Bachalom Adaberbo, I still show up, I still am able to communicate with them, to relate my messages to the Jewish people and to the world, through chalomos, through dreams, and through having visions at night. This is something Shlomo HaMelech, we find in Sefer Mishlei, that Shlomo HaMelech was the Chacham Mikal Adam, and in part of being the Chacham Mikal Adam, how did that come about? So we're told that Shlomo HaMelech has a dream, and in that dream, Shlomo HaMelech is asked to request anything that he wants. What does he request in the dream? He requests the ultimate gift of Chachma, because Chachma is something that is all-inclusive. Once you have that, you have everything. And Shlomo HaMelech is given that blessing, he's given that special request in a dream. So obviously you see, throughout Tanakh, that dreams are something that we're taken pretty seriously, and they're something that we're given significance to and attention. However, on the other extreme, we do have in the second entry on the source sheet, a pasuk in Zechariah, where we're told, "Vachalomos hashav yidaberu," which means dreams are meaningless. Dreams are worthless. They're just illusory. It really doesn't mean anything. It's not something you should pay too much attention to. Not only that, in Koheles, the psukim tell us as well, sometimes we have so many things that are bothering us, and we're thinking about our dreams, says the Pasuk in Koheles, and we're thinking about this thing and that Narishkeit, and says the Pasuk, just think about, focus on what you're supposed to be focused on, and forget everything else. Don't waste your time worrying about dreams, like the Pasuk says in Zechariah. What I want to discuss today is just give a little bit of an understanding of what dreams are, where does this concept come from in Torah perspective. And not only that, let's figure out in halacha how much credence, how much attention do we give in halacha to a dream that has some sort of halachic significance or ramification. And we'll get to that hopefully in the coming minutes in the shiur. What we do see is something which to me is interesting, and I'm not sure exactly why. What we do see is that in previous generations, certainly in the times of Tanakh, this was something that was taken very seriously. Like the Sefer Hasidim writes, Harishonim Hayimaminim Ba'od B'Divrei Chalomos. The earlier generations used to rely very heavily and used to believe in this whole idea of mysticism and of dreams, and it's something that nowadays we don't really have such a clear understanding of, and it's not something that most of us really pay attention to at all. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Brachos and Daf Nun Vav, very interesting Gemara, where the Gemara says that in Yerushalayim of old, Now, Yerushalayim of old is not the Yerushalayim that we know now, which is all the extensions the way we know Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim wasn't even the Ir HaTika, it wasn't even the whole old city as we know it. It was tiny. Yerushalayim, back in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, was a tiny little section, smaller than the old city that we know today. And yet the Gemara tells us that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash and the times of the Gemara, when Yerushalayim was there, in that little section they had 24 shops of posrei chalonos. 24 options of where you could go to have your dream interpreted. And the Gemara says that Abaye and Rava, who are the Amoraim who show up on every page in the Gemara, used to go and take this very seriously, and they would choose carefully who they would go to interpret their dreams. Now, the Gemara is not just telling us, by the way, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, they used to have a beauty salon over here, and they used to have a makeup store over there. The Gemara is not just telling us what the options were of how you can spend your time. The Gemara is obviously telling us that there were 24 options of where to go if you had an issue with your dream, because this was something that obviously people took very seriously, and it was something that they were willing to invest lots of time and lots of money and energy and effort to figure out how they're going to deal with their dreams. It seems nowadays we don't really pay that much attention to it. I don't know, just my own idea, maybe perhaps the reason why.
It's too expensive.
What?
Real estate's too expensive.
Okay, I'm willing to give my basement, you know. But the question is, why is it that we don't take such attention to dreams nowadays? Perhaps the reason why, I don't know. I haven't seen so many people, I didn't do such extensive research, but perhaps the reason why is because the Gemara does tell us that much of our dreams at night are what we think about during the day. And perhaps nowadays, when many of us don't think about the most wonderful things during the day, we're not such serious people that we're so involved in philosophy and in thinking about God all the time, unfortunately, but that's the reality, that we don't always think about all the things that we really should be thinking about, like the Pasuk in Koheles, Kiyas Elokim Yirei, the real upshot, the real understanding of life is supposed to be focused on Yerushalayim, but it's unfortunately not the case. We don't really take up all of our thoughts during the day on all those kind of ideas, so perhaps our dreams are not so important. Dreams back in the days used to be important because they were a reflection of what people were busy thinking about during the day, which are very lofty thoughts and very serious philosophical ideas, perhaps. And that's why maybe nowadays we don't take it so seriously, but nevertheless, it's an interesting idea to speak about whether or not this has credence in halacha. We do have a Gemara Maseches Nida, which is number Gimel. The Gemara says in Maseches Nida Daf Lamed. We have all throughout Shas interesting snippets in which we're told about the experience of an embryo in utero, which is very interesting. The Gemara says, as many of us are familiar with, the Gemara says that while the child is in the womb, so we assume that the child is taught by a malach, and for 9 months they're learning Kol HaTorah Kula, and many of us know that perhaps the child is slapped on the way out on the mouth, and that's what this comes from, that's what some say, I'm not sure exactly. But we have all sorts of interesting Ma'amari Chazal, which tell us about that experience that take place in the 9 months that the child is in the womb. Over here the Gemara tells us, interestingly, Hatinok b'me'imo, while that child, the unborn child, is there, Sofa umabit misofa olam ve'at sofa. Interesting. The Gemara says that a child, before it's born, is able to see misofa olam ve'at sofa, is able to have visions which span across the entire universe. And they can see things, they can understand events that are taking place on the opposite side of the world, which is an interesting thing. And the Gemara goes on to say, Va'al tatame, and don't think that this is such a strange thing to suggest. How can you? It's ridiculous, it's preposterous to say that a young child who's not even born can have a vision, can see something that's taking place on the other side of the world and have a deep understanding into a consequence of an event that happened somewhere else. How can that be? Says the Gemara, it shouldn't strike you. Why? Shaharei Adam Yashen, because we do know, the reality is, that a person can sleep every night, and I'm sleeping here in New York, V'roa chalom ba'aspamya, but I'm able to have visions from the other side of the world. And I'm able to have an understanding into things that are really not in front of me in real life. So says the Gemara, the same way we all understand that, and the same way that's not something that we're bothered with, well, so too says the Gemara, a young child before they're born can also have these kinds of visions and see things which generally would not be able to be seen. Now, what's that all about? How can that be? How can that be, number one, for a young child who's not born yet, and how could it be for us that we're able to have a vision while we're sleeping about something that's happening on the other side of the world, or we're able to see the future? How is that possible? How is that something that could be? So there's a very prolific writer who's a Rav in Eretz Yisrael. He's around 80 years old, maybe a little bit older than that. And in my opinion, I know he's very under the radar. A lot of people don't know him, but in my opinion, he's one of the absolutely most prolific writers of our time. He's a Gbi Yisrael who people really don't know about. His name is Rabbi Yoel Schwartz. Rabbi Yoel Schwartz wrote over 200 Svarim. Why does nobody know about them? The reason why is because his wife owns a women's hat store in Mea Shearim, and that's where they sell the books. So I don't know how many people would find out about it. She is the salesman. My father is always the only man, I guess, who goes into that store. So my father somehow found out about this and started buying. Whenever he's there, he wants to help support him, and he also loves to read his books. Now, what's fascinating about his books is he lives in Har Nof. He's a Haredi all the way, but still, he quotes in his books from philosophical sources. He quotes from psychology journals. He quotes from everywhere. The man is unbelievable. I don't know how he gets his hands on everything, but he knows secular sources. He knows Torah sources. He knows everything. So here, I did locate a book that he has called Divrei Chalomos, which to me is a very interesting concept that he spent a lot of time researching, just the idea of dreams. And one paragraph that he writes is trying to give a little bit of an understanding of what this means. When we have a dream, what exactly is taking place, and how could it be that we're able to have a vision or we're able to understand something which is really not taking place in reality in front of us? So let's read together just one short paragraph from him. He explains, Shenishmas Adam hi ruchanis. We understand that our neshama, that our soul, is something which is spiritual in its very nature. And misugeles leros mikzeha olam v'atzofa. Our neshama, in truth, in essence, is really able to have a deep understanding of things that are taking place, all over the world, and we're not confined to the reality that we see in front of us. V'chein hu yachal liros asidos. Our neshama, our soul, is not really confined to time either. We're able to see and predict the future, kivin shehi roeh, Shalo derech ha'ayin v'ha'ozen, because really our neshama, really our soul, is not confined, it's not restricted by our physical body, by the nature of physicality that we all live in. She'aleim mutalim mugbalos teva habriya kivan shehem inyanei haguf. Yes, we have barriers which stop ourselves from being able to do all sorts of things. We can't fly to the moon and we can't just see things that are going on across the world. But still, our neshama, our soul, our essence, really would be able to do that if not for the barriers that are in the way. Ulam, he says. Kedesha Adam, so let's just speak out what he says. He suggests the following. He writes that, imagine if everything in our lives was so clear. You know, we're told, Chazal tell us, that malachim have no bechira. They have no free will. Angels have no free will to choose what they want to do and whether they want to do it. Why is that? Is it that God suspended their free will? No, that's not what it means. What it means is that they live in such close proximity to God and everything to them is so obvious and so clear. Imagine if we had life where everything was so clear to us. We never had any doubts, never had any questions. Everything, right away when we saw a situation, we were able to read up the whole thing, understand what it was going to be, all the implications, understand what's right, what's wrong. We would have no bechira chafshus. We would have no way of expressing our own individuality in the world because everything would be so obvious. That's what it means that malachim, that angels don't have bechira because not that it was suspended, it's just that they have such a clarity in their life. And because God didn't want that to be the experience of our lives, He wanted us to have free will and He wanted us to have choice of what we want to do and how we're going to do it. Therefore, He made separations, He made barriers. And He confined our neshama into a body that now we're stuck with physicality. And everything is not going to be so clear. And it's our job to figure out how to navigate all the disillusion and all the difficulty in the world that we all seem to be suffering with. And we don't always have clarity. And that, what he says, is sometimes when the body releases itself or frees itself of those barriers, then the neshama can now go back to its original state and be able to see other things. He suggests that one of the times when that happens is when a person goes to sleep. The Gemara tells us in the last parak in Maseches Brachos that Shina is echad mishisha mimisa. A person, when they go to sleep, shouldn't scare anybody, when you go to sleep, it's 1/60th of death, which means your body somehow shuts down in a certain way. You're sleeping, you're not, all your faculties are not working the way they normally would when you're awake. And therefore, says Rabbi Yoel Schwartz, maybe that's what it means here. That now when you have that opportunity, when your body releases itself a little bit from the physicality, now your neshama is able to soar. Now you're able to have understandings of things that are taking place in other parts of the world, and you're able to see sometimes into the future. That's what a dream is all about. And I found that to be a fascinating concept. Not only because the way he suggested, and you can read it on your own, the way he portrays it is very beautiful, as he does in all of his books, but if you look in the next source, Rabbi Yochum Levavitz, who was the Mir Mashgiach, he was the Mashgiach until I believe 1936 when he passed away, but he was really the powerhouse behind all the Talmidim in the Mir Yeshiva in Europe. So he writes also a very similar idea. Let's read his paragraph. Ki inyan hachalomosu. He says, what are dreams all about? Where does this concept come from? What is it all about? Kasher hanefesh nifredes ktsas mitoch haguf mitoch kol chushav. When the soul is able to release itself a little bit from the physical body, roehi gam asidos. At that point, you're even able to see things that will happen in the future. Hamikrim habayim is galim lefanav. Sometimes we're able to see things that are going to come upon us in future times. And sodzet srichim ladaz barer, says Rabbi Yeruchim Levavis, this is something that we need to all keep in mind. Why? Ki inyan karov elecha hadavar miod, shegam nevua krova upshuta. Such a beautiful way to express it. And he says, you know, we all talk about nevuah and we think that it's 1,000 miles away from us. And we think that nevuah is only left. Ruach HaKodesh is something that's only limited to those elevated individuals. It's only for those people who live on a different planet than we live. But that's not true, he says. We're that close to nevuah. Understand that every neshama, every soul is able to be that close to nevuah. The only thing that's blocking is all of the restrictions that we place upon ourselves in the physical world that we live in. Karov elecha hadavar miod. I found that to be a fascinating insight, and it's humbling when you think about it, what we have inside of us. When you think about what we're really capable of accomplishing and what we can do and the clarity that we can really have in all of our lives is something to me which is very fascinating. The Gemara does give us different examples of dreams, and if you want to break it down basically, I guess, into two categories, you have some kinds of dreams which come to point out to somebody their iniquity, which come to say some infraction that they've transgressed or some sort of wrongdoing. The Gemara is full of those kinds of stories. In fact, the Pasuk in Iov gives a lengthy description about how Iov was confronted in a dream and he was told about the things that he's doing wrong and that he has to do tshuva and that he has to work on himself. And often that's what the Gemara tells us. The Gemara does say in Brachos Daf Nun Hei, we're told that Elokim Asa Sheyireyu Milafana. We have a Pasuk in Koheles which tells us God did this in order that we should fear him, in order that we should be in awe, we should have reverence for his presence. And the Gemara the Pasuk doesn't really finish off the line. What does it mean? God did X in order that we should revere him. What is the X? It doesn't say what he did. Elokim asa blank sheyiru milfanav. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ze chalom ra. What that's referring to is that sometimes God gives us difficult dreams, which make us scared, sheyireyu milfanav, that we should be shaken up, that we should wake up and recognize that life is not as simple as we thought it was. And really the point of life is that we should have Yerushamayim, we should redirect our focus, we should redirect our attention and make sure to always keep our eye on the goal, on what we're supposed to be focused on. So that's what the Gemara says. That is one very important idea when you think about dreams, that it's made sometimes, a chalom ra is made, a frightening dream is made for us to be awoken. The Sefer HaKuzari, which is a fascinating story in and of itself, it was written by the Spanish philosopher in the 1100s, where Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, who claims, whether the story is true or not, but he claims that it doesn't matter whether or not it's true. The Sefer HaKuzari is an amazing Sefer on Jewish philosophy. If you have a chance to read it, it's in English, it's in Hebrew, it's in Yiddish and Spanish and everything. It's a beautiful book, and it's really about the core values of Jewish philosophy. And why was it written? So Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi claimed that there was a Melach HaKuzarim. There was a king out there who was the king of a big, I don't know if it was a country or a big, I'm not sure exactly what the story was, but I think they're called in English the Khazars. Is that correct? So, they what? They found coins, right. But the question is if the story is true. So I don't know. So Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi claimed that this king was looking around. He felt a very spiritual push and he felt a drive. And he was trying to figure out what is the authentic religion. And he went, he had all sorts of philosophical questions. He tried this religion, he tried that one, he tried the other one. And finally he showed up and he decided he wanted to try the Jewish religion. So he sends all of his philosophical questions and all of his debates, he sends to Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, and Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi now records all of the responses that he sent to the Melach HaKuzarim. The end of the story is, he was so convinced, this is a very happily ever after, but the way Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi says it is, that he was so convinced, the Melach HaKuzarim was so convinced by the arguments of Judaism and the authenticity of Judaism that in the end he became a ger, and not only did he become a convert, but he also converted his entire community, his entire kingdom along with him. That's the way this story goes. What they write there in the Sefer HaKuzari is, why is it that he felt he should now check out the Jewish religion? Why did he feel that was the next step? The answer is because he had a recurrent dream that kept coming back to him and he couldn't get rid of it. And the dream said, Kavanascha Ritzuya, Ava Ma'asecha Einam Ritzuyim. He had a dream that kept coming to him that said, Kavanascha Ritzuya, your intentions are very noble. Yes, you're on a philosophical quest and you're trying to find the truth in the world, but Ma'asecha Einam Ritzuyim. You're barking up the wrong tree. You're looking for this religion, for that one, but you're looking at the wrong things. Yes, it's nice that you have a spiritual interest, but you're looking at the wrong thing until finally he came and he looked into the Jewish religion and now he understood that he was at the right place because his dream stopped coming to him. So that's an interesting thing. You do find that dreams are made sometimes that a person should be encouraged for a reconciliation, that a person should be encouraged to pacify somebody else or to make good for a wrongdoing, for something that was transgressed. What's interesting is that even though you have that category of dreams, we do find in the Gemara in two different places a story about the same town of Rav Meir in two different contexts, where the Gemara tells us, both in the Gemara is in Meseches Gittin, the Gemara has a whole discussion about what happens when an orphan, when the parents die and the child is very young, and the parents leave over a Yerusha, the parents leave over real estate and all sorts of money and everything, and the child is too young to really understand how to deal with all of this. So what do we do? So the Gemara tells us that the Bezdin, the local judicial system, will set up a executor, I guess, of somebody who's trusted by the community, and is going to take care of the estate of this person who has now passed away and left young children who can't take care of it on their own. And the Gemara says that now, let's say they own a hotel, they own a piece of property, and somebody claims that this is a good thing to sell. So the question is, at what point does the person have a right to buy or to sell or to invest and do different things with the money? Is he only meant to just look after the money, or is he meant to sell and to invest as well? So the Gemara says that Rav Meir at the time was living in a community where they had a situation like this, and Rav Meir was adamant. There was a big discussion whether or not you should sell a certain property on behalf of these orphans, and Rav Meir was adamant, absolutely not, you have to keep it as is, and you shouldn't sell the property. And that night, Rav Meir has a dream, and Rav Meir is confronted in a dream, and this whoever it was in the dream comes to him, and he says, "I'm trying to invest the money, and you're here destroying it. What are you doing? I'm trying to make better for the Yisomim, for the orphans, and look, every time I try, you're making destruction out of everything that they have." So if that would have come to me, I would have understood that obviously it means I should give up on my position and forget it. And nevertheless, Rav Meir came back to Yeshiva the next day and he said, "Divrei chalomos lo malim lo maridim. I couldn't care less. We don't give any significance to the dreams, and it doesn't make a difference who comes to me. It doesn't matter if it's the father, if it's the mother, if it's the executor, whoever it is. If God himself comes to me in a dream, I wouldn't listen because dreams don't mean anything." That's what Rav Meir said, even though it was at the expense of somebody else. It was at the young children's expense, and there was a concern that maybe he was doing the wrong thing. But still, he took it so far as to say, even when you have a dream like that, we follow the pasuk in Zechariah v'chalomos hashav yedaber. We don't follow dreams at all. Very interesting that that's what he felt. We do find another kind of category of dreams, and that is when you have, the Gemara says in Tainis on Daf Chav Dalid, that sometimes you have a dream where you're warned not to go to a certain place because something bad is going to happen there. That's what the Gemara tells us, a story that one night, Rava was one of the Amoraim in the Gemara. One night his father came to him and said, "Don't sleep in your bed, something bad is going to happen tonight." And he went to a hotel somewhere, he slept somewhere else, and they came back the next morning and they saw that his bed had stab marks all over the place, something took place, and obviously he was saved. Okay, so it's interesting that you find these two different kinds of dreams. A dream like that, I would say, probably you should take with some measure of seriousness, I don't know. But the Gemara says that Rava did take it with seriousness. On the other hand, my father told me over once that Rav Shach used to tell stories to his grandchildren at the Shabbos table. I guess not exactly what we all do at the Shabbos table, but there were so many stories that the grandson later, Rabbi Bergman, who's the grandson of Rav Shach, collected all the stories that Rav Shach used to tell all the grandchildren at the table, and he printed a beautiful sefer with all those stories in it. So he says a story about Rav Chaim Valozhiner, who was the Talmud Muvak of the Vilna Gaon. Now, the Vilna Gaon was as litvish as they come. He was fighting the Hasidim tooth and nail. So his Talmud, Rav Chaim Valozhiner, I guess, was a pretty staunch Litvak as well. So they don't, you know, Litvish don't believe in any of these things. I've asked my father about dreams and things. Yeah, you know, we don't listen to any of this stuff. So Rav Chaim Valozhiner, just to prove the point, Rav Chaim Valozhiner had a person in his community, I guess in Valozhin, I don't know. And the person, I think the way Rav Shach said over the story, the person was in the lumber business. And he used to chop down trees and he would send them across the river or something. He would float with them and then he would figure out how to get back. And he had a dream that kept coming to him night after night, and the dream was informing him that he shouldn't go next week down the river because his lumber is going to crack while he's on the river and he's going to drown and it's very dangerous and he shouldn't go. And he went to Rav Chaim Valozhiner that week and he asked him, "What should I do? I keep having this dream and I don't know, should I give up on my business? Should I not go next week?" And Rav Chaim Valozhiner said, "Nah, chalomos hashavi daber, it doesn't matter what they're telling you in a dream, doesn't matter how many times they come, just ignore it, doesn't make a difference. We don't give any credence, no significance to a dream, ignore it." And lo and behold, the very next week, I'm sorry to be laughing, but it's an interesting story. Lo and behold, the very next week, what happens? He goes about his business, and he's going along the river with his lumber, and the river cracks, and the lumber cracks, and he falls in, and he drowned, and he died. And he comes to be Menachem Avil, and he knew, Reb Chaim Volozhiner knew, that the children are going to have big claims against him. You know, what do you mean? Our father came to you and asked that he had a dream, and you know, you told him, you advised him that he should go anyway. I would hope never to be that rabbi. But Reb Chaim Volozhiner was not concerned, and he showed up at the Shiva, and he said the following. I know that you're going to be upset at me for telling your father that he should go, but let me tell you something. If your father would come and ask me this again, I would say the same thing again. Why? Because dreams have no significance, and if it's a time for somebody to pass from this world, it doesn't make a difference where he is. If your father wouldn't have gone to work that day, he would have passed away here, because it doesn't make a difference what you think, it doesn't make a difference what they show you in a dream. Dreams are insignificant, even when the dream comes to tell you something which is danger to your life. And here you see it actually came true, but your father would have passed away here anyway. So that's Reb Chaim Volozhiner, a real staunch Litvak. That's the way he looked at even scary dreams, even dreams that tell you something about being careful in the future. Chaim Volozhiner didn't seem to be concerned about that at all. I don't know. We'll see in the next couple of minutes whether or not that's the perspective that all of us should be comfortable with. Yeah.
Well, if this was the case, Rabbi Yaakov Ben Zvi, his sitter, has many little
Yeah. It's not Rabbi Yaakov Emden. It's the Gemara. Has a what we call a hatavas chalom. So the question is, you're asking a very good question. Why do we have in the sitter, we have something called hatavas chalom when somebody has a bad dream? Not only that, one is never allowed to fast on Shabbos, right? Generally, we assume you have to have Onik Shabbos. For those who were here in the summer, we spoke about it at length. Onik Shabbos includes having meals on Shabbos, drinking, eating, enjoying ourselves. You're not allowed to fast on Shabbos, or you're not supposed to. Says the Shulchan Aruch, what if a person has a terrible dream Friday night, and now they want to fast the next day because they're concerned? I had a dream that something terrible is going to happen to me, and now I want to do tshuva, and I want to fast because I want God to somehow forget about the dream that happened. I don't want that to take place. Says the Gemara, you're even allowed to fast on Shabbos and forego the mitzvah of Kavod and Onik Shabbos because we assume that it's so important to be fasting. So what do you do with all that? What do you do with the fact that the sitter has a whole text that you're supposed to say? Anybody know when we say it? Anybody? Let's see if anyone pays attention. What? Birchas Kohanim, thank you. That's right. So you actually, this is the time when we say it. You'll pay attention next time on Yontif when we say Birchas Kohanim. We recite a paragraph, Chalom Ra'isi Ve'eni Yodei Mahu. We talk about our dreams at the time. It's obviously something that we give some credence to, we give some significance. So I don't know. I'm not sure exactly. There seems to be different perspectives on this. And again, perhaps it goes back to what we said before. I'm not sure if it's the right answer, but perhaps it's because we don't think about such serious thoughts all day long now. Maybe that's the reason why our dreams nowadays are not considered to be so significant. I'm not sure exactly. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. So now let's move on to a very important part of the shiur, and that is, so let's look in halacha. How does halacha look at dreams when they have consequences lahalacha? For example, let's look at a gemara together. We have a gemara in Sanhedrin, daf lamed amud aleph. Says the gemara, a very unfortunate story, somebody was a child of a multi-billionaire. And this person was not excited that one day it's going to be theirs, but they knew. They always knew in the back of their minds, one day, parent is going to pass away, and I know that I'm going to get all of that estate. I know that I'm going to get all those billions of dollars. The problem is, one day, the parent has a sudden heart attack, and there was not enough time for the parent to actually give over all the information to the child. Now, they didn't have banks back then. So the child has no idea where all the father's money is hidden. Maybe it's in a mattress somewhere, maybe he hid it under a tree somewhere, and he has no idea. Now, he's left without any money. And he's very upset and he's distraught, and the Gemara tells the following story. There was somebody who was distraught, who was very distressed over the fact, I know that my father passed away, and I know that he left so much money, and I'm going to be a multi-billionaire, but I just have no idea where it is. And he didn't have a chance to tell me before he passed away where he left everything, and how to get into his bank account. So what should I do? Says the Gemara, that night, somebody comes to him in a dream, and he tells him, by the way, let me give you an account of exactly how much money there is. This and this amount, $10 million. But Makom Ploni Hein, I want you to go fly to that country, and it's right under this tree, in this place, in this location. Tells him exactly where to find it. But, Shamayser Sheni Hein, you're going to find $10 million if you go to that place, but I want you to know it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, not to you. Zehaya Maisa, this story actually happened, says the Gemara. V'amru, and what was the response? Divrei chalomos lamalim v'lamaridim. So the Gemara doesn't really tell you. So what happened? This was the story, and did he find the money or did he not? What do you think? The answer is yes. He traveled. It's worth traveling, you know, spending a few hundred dollars to travel to try and find it. Spends a few hundred dollars, goes to that place, finds under that very exact tree the exact amount of money that he was told in a dream. However, now that he finds the money, he remembers that in the dream it also told him that the money doesn't belong to him. He's now told that the money belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So what does he do now? Shows up to the rabbi, asks him a shayla, and he says, well, I had this dream, I found this money. It was exactly in the place where I was told that it was going to be, but I was also told that it's going to be belonging to somebody else, not to me. And what was the response? Divrei chalomos lamalim v'lamaridim. Just a dream, don't matter, doesn't make a difference, you're allowed to keep the money, it doesn't matter. That's very fascinating. Every other aspect of the dream was true. All the money was found exactly where it was supposed to be, and the exact amount. And yet we tell him you can just ignore the last part of it and you can keep the money. And this, in fact, is Paskin, the Rambam writes like this, and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin's like this, that if a person has a dream like that, and they're told something about where the money is and how it is and where it's hidden and how to get it, and the end, they add on something that says, and by the way, the money belongs to this and this person, you don't have to give it to that person. Okay? What it would seem to indicate is that halacha really gives absolutely no credence to dreams whatsoever. Because here you have a story where everything came true and yet we're completely ignoring the most important part of the story, that it doesn't belong to you. So that's number one. Interestingly enough, in the early 1300s, one of the Rishonim, one of the Balei HaTosis, had a lot of issues and he had a lot of questions that he used to think of during the day. And every night he would invite a malach to come to him in a dream. He would invite some sort of angel to come to him and answer all of his questions. A nice, wonderful idea. So in the morning when he woke up, he would make a record of all the... He would write down, he took a note of all the questions that he asked and all the answers that were given, and he put out a sefer, he published a sefer that's called Shailus Hutshuvas Min HaShamayim. Okay, I guess that's the best name to call it. And this was a major controversy whether this is something that we should rely on. Well, it's very nice that you invited a malach to come and help you out in a dream, but do we really give any credence to a malach that's coming to somebody in a dream? Should we really paskin like that sefer about anything? So I would say, well, who can be better than a malach? You know, isn't that the greatest gift? You know, there's an interesting... We were talking before about Reb Chaim Volozhiner. So he was the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. Talking about Litvaks, listen to this. So the Vilna Gaon... I'm a Litvak myself. But so you shouldn't think I'm talking down. It's just a different perspective on life. So the Vilna Gaon himself, Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes about the Vilna Gaon in the Hakdama, in the introduction to the Sefer Safra Ditzniyusa. So he writes about the Vilna Gaon, his Rebbe, that the Vilna Gaon used to tell the students that if you daven hard enough at night before you go to sleep, you can have a malach that will come to you in a dream and will give you all the answers to your questions that you were bothered with during the day. So he encouraged the students, you know, if you're interested in such a thing, you should do that. So the students were wondering, well, if the Rebbe is telling us that that's the way to do it, so it must be that he's had such an experience. Otherwise, how does he know about it? So they, a little bit disrespectfully, asked him, well, maybe you can tell us, what have your experiences been like and what has a malach taught you in your life? Obviously this works for you, so I'm just curious, what exactly is your experience? And the Vilna Gaon responded right away and he said, every time a malach shows up to me in a dream, I tell him to get away from me. Why? Because he says, if I have an opportunity to work hard in my life and come to the answers on my own, why would I ever want to take the easy way out and get the malach's answer? And that's why he became the Vilna Gaon. That's the answer. Because every time a malach showed up to him in a dream, and I'm sure it was every night of his life, when he only slept 2 hours, the history books say, every night of his life when a malach showed up to him, he said, I'm not interested in taking easy way out. That's not what life is all about. I want to figure it out on my own. You know, we had a few weeks ago, in the parsha, the story of Yaakov and Esav when Rivka was pregnant, and the Medrash tells us, Chazal, Rashi quotes it on Chumash, that every time she would pass a Beis Avodah Zarah, in place of idol worship, one of the children would want to push out. And every time she passed a Beis Medrash, a yeshiva, a shul, one of the kids would want to jump out, and she couldn't figure out what was happening until she understood, Shnei goyim bemitnech, you have Yaakov and you have Esav. And the question, the world asked the question, well, I understand, Esav wants to go out to serve Avodah Zarah. He doesn't have a chance to do that. But what happens to a child while they're in utero? What happens? The Gemara tells us that they're able to learn with a malach. So why was Yaakov trying to jump out when he gets to a yeshiva? What could be better than that experience to learn with a malach? That's the question everybody's bothered with. So some say the answer is, well, it's very nice to learn with a malach, but if your chavrusa has to be Esav, it's not worth it. That's what some say. But I think perhaps the real answer is, based on what the Vilna Gaon says, perhaps the real answer is, Yaakov Avinu understood, yes, it's a nice experience to learn with a malach, but why would I want that? If I have an opportunity to go, stop by a Beis Medrash, to go and work on it on my own and figure out what the Amita Shel Torah is without taking the easy way, without taking the easy route to getting to that goal, to that milestone that I want to get to of being a great Talmud Chacham of the Yaakov Ishtam Yoshe Bahalim, That's not the way I'm going to be successful, is just taking everything from a malach. I would rather jump out and get out by the Beis Medrash and figure it out on my own. So that's what the Vilna Gaon, that was his perspective when the malach used to come to him in a dream. So we have this Sefer Shalos Hatshuvos Min HaShamayim, major controversy. You can read it on your own over here. Rabbi Avadya Yosef in number Zion writes from the in the Sefer Yechaveh Das, he has a whole discussion whether or not we should actually rely on that Sefer for anything, or we completely disregard and say that it has absolutely no consequence at all on halacha, and we don't take any of this into account, and we don't get involved in such things. Lo b'shamayim, the Torah is not in Shamayim, the Torah is here, the Torah was given to us, and sometimes we might make a mistake. Sometimes a rabbi makes a psak and it's a mistake, but that's part of life, that we all make mistakes, and that's part of the experience of learning Torah. We try to think about what the emes is, we try to figure out what the truth really is. You can't be irresponsible, but you try to figure out what you believe is the truth, and that's the way you live life. You know, there's a story the Gemara has in Bav Metzia, Daf Nuntes. A very strange story. The Gemara says that there was a disagreement about some halachic issue, and one of the Tanoim was so adamant that he was correct, and he tried to prove it to his friends, and none of the proofs were working, so he says, you know what? If I'm correct, charuv yochiach, there's a tree outside that will get uprooted from the ground, and that's how you'll know that I'm right. All of a sudden, everyone turns around, and they see the tree goes flying out of the ground. I would be pretty convinced. No, everybody says, not good enough. So he says, you know, if I'm correct, he says, you see this stream of water over here? It's flowing north-south, whatever it was. It's going to start flowing backwards. And all of a sudden, he turns around, everyone looks, and the stream of water starts going backwards. For some reason, nobody's convinced yet. Then he says, you know what, if I'm correct, the walls of the Beis Medrash will lean in and start to crumble. All of a sudden, everyone, you know, puts their hand over their heads, and the walls start caving in, until they start yelling at him, look, you're destroying the whole building, what are you doing? And he stops. So why didn't they listen to him? Why didn't they listen to him? Answers the Gemara, you can bring all the proofs in the world, but lo b'shamayim. The Torah was given for us to figure out, for us to have the experience of working hard at it. That's what our job in life is supposed to be. It's not to take the easy way out. We don't bring proof to heaven, and we don't think that the Torah was left up there. The Torah was given to us. And we make mistakes, and sometimes we don't understand what we're supposed to be really living and what we're supposed to be doing, but that's part of our experience. God gave it to us, He understands that we're mortals, He understands that mortals make mistakes, but still, that's the experience and that's what it's supposed to be. So that's what Rav Avadya Yosef writes. This is why there was a major objection to that Sefer that was written in the 1300s, the Sefer, Shalos Hatshuvos Min HaShamayim. I would have said, I'll take that any day. A whole Sefer of answers from a Malach. Answer is no. We assume that it has no relevance, no influence in halacha, and we totally disregard everything that comes from that kind of source. So, on the one hand, we have this Gemara, again, if you remember where we started, this Gemara in Sanhedrin, that has the story about the person who has the dream, where the money is, and now he's told that the money belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara says he has every right to ignore the dream and forget about it, even though he got the money in the end, but he can say that the money belongs to him. So it seems that in halacha, dreams have no relevance. On the other hand, we have a Gemara Nedarim Daf Chesam at Beis where we're told the following. Mishani duhu bachalom, says the Gemara, if you have somebody who has a dream one night, and in that dream they excommunicate the person from the community. Somebody comes to him in a dream, a bezdin or whatever it is, and says, by the way, you're in deep trouble, God is very angry at you, and you are now not allowed to be a part of your community anymore, we're going to excommunicate you, and life is going to be difficult for you. Says the Gemara, that's something that you need to take seriously, you must go right away in the morning and sit down a bezdin and figure out how are you going to take care of the problem? So all the Rishonim asked the question. So, I don't understand. Didn't we just say, if I have a dream, and the dream is so clear, and everything about the dream comes true, besides the last point, that it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm allowed to ignore it, I disregard. So how come over here, all of a sudden, the Gemara is telling me that I have to take it seriously? So this is a major question. And the two basic answers go as follows. The Tashbeit, who was one of the Rishonim, lived in the late 1300s, writes that the answer is like this. Really, in essence, we're not sure what the status of dreams are. We don't know. Are dreams supposed to be taken seriously? Are they something that we don't pay attention to? We don't really know. So let's revert back to the regular rules of when we're not sure what to do when something happens. Let's say, for example, come to the shir, and a fight breaks out between myself and my mother-in-law, and I have my watch. The truth is, she bought this for me, but now it belongs to me. And somebody just walks up and says, by the way, that's my watch. Why do you have it? And I say, what do you mean it's your watch? I'm wearing it on my hand. It belongs to me. And a whole fight breaks out and we're not sure exactly what to do. Who does it belong to? Who does it belong to? Neither of us have any proof. Why does it belong to me? Because I'm holding it. You came out of nowhere and decided it belongs to you. It's none of your business. We have a suffix here. We're not sure what the halacha is. Maybe it's mine, maybe it's yours. The answer is, go by the status quo. Happens to be on my hand. and it happens to always have been on my hands since I got married. So if that's the case, so there's no reason to believe that it belongs to anybody else. That's the general halacha when it comes to questions that arise in inyane mamonos, we say. In areas of money matters where we're not sure what to do, we assume you stay with the status quo. When it comes to issues, let's say you walk into a restaurant and you're not sure if it has a hashgacha or not. You're not sure if what they're serving is kosher. So you'll say, well, I don't know, I'm not sure, so you may as well eat there. Right? Nobody would do that. Why not? Because when you're in doubt, when it comes to maybe violating an isser, maybe violating something which is not permissible to eat, you don't have a right to say, well, I'm not sure, so I may as well just eat it anyway. So we have different rules, says the Tashbetz. We have rules for getting about dreams. We have different rules of what we do when we're in doubt. So too, he says, let's transfer that to our halacha over here. We're not really sure what the status of dreams are. We don't know, should we take them seriously or not? So when you have the Gemara that tells you about the money that was found and you're not sure if it belongs to you or belongs to him, stay with the status quo. That's the halacha by any issues that arise in money matters. And the status quo is, I found the money, money is in my hands, so it belongs to me. Beis HaMikdash is not holding the money, I'm holding the money. So it's mine, I can keep it. That's why when it comes to issues of money, I'm able to keep it and we say, Divrei Chalamos Lomala Melomaridim. We don't pay attention at all. When it comes to perhaps me being excommunicated from my community, that's not a money matter. So when you're in doubt whether or not you are now excommunicated and whether or not you're in big trouble, well, I would err on the side of caution. And that's what the Gemara says, that's something that you have to take seriously. The Tashbetz in another tshuva in his Sefer writes an interesting story. Let's read it together. Number Ches. And this, again, this proves the point that he was trying to argue, that we're not sure what to do with dreams, and therefore we have to draw the line. And the regular rules in all of Torah are, whenever you have a question in monetary matters, you always go by the status quo. Whenever you have a question in other matters, you have to err on the side of caution. So let's look. The Tashbetz writes that there was a major disagreement that broke out about a certain fish, whether or not the fish is kosher or not. I don't know what the whole history of the fish was, but he says it was called the barbuti fish. I don't know exactly what that is. So he says, let's read the story. Matzasi b'shem Rabbeinu Baruch Shasiper. Rabbeinu Baruch was another one of the Bali Atosas in the 1300s. So he says the following story. Pam achas, achal Rabbeinu Ephraim, one of his friends, Rabbeinu Ephraim, ate this fish called the barbuti fish. And he assumed, obviously, that it was a kosher fish. And obviously, there were many who disagreed with him. But he was strong in his opinion. He was convicted. He felt, you know, with conviction that this was a kosher fish. Uvelaila, and that night, Nira lo zake nechad. Rabbeinu Ephraim goes to sleep. Guess what? An old man comes to him with a long white beard. Bal seva o bal sayar. V'ha'aras panim. He had a beautiful face. And migoldo zakein. V'hevi lo kupa malei shratzim. And he presents Rabbeinu Ephraim with a box full of insects. And he says, would you like to take a taste of these delicious insects? And Rabbeinu Ephraim is mortified and he says, what's going on? How come this person is coming to me? And he realizes, obviously, this has something to do with the psak that he made in the morning that you're allowed to eat this barbuti fish. So he says, v'hevi lo kupa malei shratzim amar lo kumachol. This beautiful looking white beard man says to him, take a bite of these insects. V'nir tamod, and he's very shaken up. Amar lo halo shratzim heim. Rabbeinu Ephraim says to this man in the dream, aren't they insects? I'm not allowed to eat insects. Amar lo, kach elu mutarim kemo hashratzim ha'achalta hayom. These have the same status as the thing that you said was mutter this morning. You went around parading around town and telling everyone that the barbuti fish is kosher. That wasn't kosher, and if you thought that was kosher, then this is kosher also. That's what the dream told him, and from then on, the Tashbetz records the story, they never again ate the barbuti fish, because they realized, obviously, there's something serious. Ay, dibre chalomos lamalam velomaridin. Answer is, over here, what's the issue that we're dealing with? We're dealing with an issue of maybe it's kosher, maybe it's not. If somebody comes to you in a dream and says, maybe this is not kosher, well, then we have to take that seriously, because again, this is what the Tashbetz argues. The answer is, halacha does give credence to it when we're talking about a situation where we're not sure whether or not there's an issue that's being violated, then you have to err on the side of caution. Along these very same lines, the Chalkas Yaakov, who was the Av Bezdin in Zurich in the early 1970s and 1900s, he passed away in 1970s, so he wrote an interesting question that came to him, that there was somebody who passed away, and they were buried in their community, I guess in Zurich or in Switzerland, wherever it was, and they kept coming back to the family in a dream saying that they would like the body to be interred and brought to Eretz Yisrael. And the family came to Rabbi Breisch, who was the author of the Tshuvas Chalkas Yaakov, and they asked him, are we obligated to pay all this money to inter the body and bring it to Eretz Yisrael? So he first gets into a whole discussion about whether or not you're allowed to inter a body to bring it somewhere else, and the answer is you are allowed to if it's to bring it to Eretz Yisrael. To move it from New York to Washington, that's not permissible. But to move it from here to Eretz Yisrael, that is permissible. That's an upgrade. So we assume, once you get that out of the way, that you have an upgrade and you're allowed to move it, the question was, are we obligated, are we responsible to listen to the dream and do it? And he comes to the conclusion, no. Why? Because he says the Tashbetz argues that whenever we have a question in monetary matters, we don't follow dreams. And over here, you know what expense it's going to be to move the body from here to Eretz Yisrael? You are not obligated to listen to a dream when it's going to cost you money. You go by the status quo. So he argues along the lines of the Tashbetz. Well, again, if you love the person enough, you might want to do it anyway. But obviously we're talking about a family who didn't have enough money or whatever it was, and they wanted to know what's the halacha. And he argued, based on the Tashbetz's understanding, one would not have to go ahead and do that service for the person who has passed away. So that's one approach as to explain when we follow dreams and when we don't. A similar but a little bit different approach is written by the Shivas Tzion, who's the son of the Nodi Yehuda, where he suggests the following. He says, yes, we have all sorts of dreams, and when you have a dream that's about Narishkeit, obviously it's Narishkeit and you don't pay attention. And he says, obviously, if you just went to the circus and all of a sudden tonight you have a dream about an elephant, okay, so you know that has no meaning, because it's only because you went to the circus today and you saw elephants and now you're dreaming about them, or you're so excited about it, or you're going to the circus or something, so you're dreaming about things that you saw. But let's say we're not dealing with that category. So he says the bottom line is like this. Really, we give no credence to dreams at all. Really, we don't pay attention at all. However, he says, we do find, let's say on Shabbos, we all know that pikuach nefesh is mutter on Shabbos. You're allowed to be mechal Shabbos if somebody's life is in danger. How much danger does a person's life have to be in? How much danger does the person's life have to be in to be mechal Shabbos? Anybody know? So somebody last night said stitches. Now, stitches is not such a good answer, because it depends what kind of stitches. So, whatever. We'll have a shiur about that some other time, about being mechal Shabbos. But the answer basically is, we'll get into the details some other time. I think it's actually a very important topic. Come to think of it, it should have really been, let me just digress for a minute. The Shulchan Aruch says, if somebody comes to ask a shayla on Shabbos whether or not they're allowed to be mechal Shabbos to bring someone to the hospital, it says, Hanishal hareze meguna. The rabbi who is presented with the question is admonished that somebody came and asked. So Rav Schwab once pointed out to my father, what's wrong with the person who's being asked? What did I do wrong? If you come and ask the question, it's because you don't know the halacha. What did I do wrong? I'm just available for somebody to come ask me whether or not you're allowed to do it. And I'm going to give the answer. So what's the problem? What did I do? Just because they don't know the halacha? So Rav Schwab said, what you see is the answer is the first Shabbos that a Rav is in a community, the first job, the first year that they have to give is the laws of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. Nobody should be in doubt about what to do. And if anyone is in doubt, it means you're not doing a good job as the rabbi. That's why the Shulchan Aruch says, Hanishal, the person who is asked, who is presented with the question, Hareza Meguna, means you're not doing a good job. Because this is a fundamental of Judaism. This is something you need to discuss about when you're allowed to call out Tzela, when you have to go to the hospital, and when you don't. The Rambam writes, when you have a situation of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, he says, don't leave it to the person on the park bench who's a homeless who nobody cares about. Don't leave it to him to be Mechal Shabbos. He says, G'dolei HaChachamim, the greats of the town, the greats of the generation should be the ones at the forefront of being Mechal Shabbos for people who need to go to the hospital. And we should show everybody, says the Rambam, the greats of the town should show everybody that this is something we take life very seriously and we don't take chances. And even though Chilul Shabbos is very serious, human life is more serious. And therefore, he says, even G'dolei HaChachamim should go out of their way and be Mechal Shabbos. So how much of a Pikuach Nefesh does it have to be? So we assume, let's say, once in a blue moon, so the New York Times will write an article once every 1,000 years that somebody died from an ingrown toenail. Okay, so now somebody has an ingrown toenail. Will you rush them to the hospital on Shabbos? Of course not. Why? Because that's what the Chassam Sofer says in Choshen Mishpat. He says, Echad mine elef. That's a million and a billion chance. It's something you don't have to worry about. It's something none of us on a regular day of the week, if you had an ingrown toenail, you would go to work and you would figure it out at night how to make yourself more comfortable. You wouldn't stay home from work. So then you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos either. It's one in a million chance that something's going to happen. But what if it's less than that? What if it's something that, yes, often this is something that gets infected and it could be really dangerous and it could be life-threatening, it could really hurt somebody. So then we don't take chances when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh. Says the Shivas Tzion, that's the answer over here as well. When we talk about all other monetary matters or all other isurim, all other issues in halacha, we don't give any credence, any recognition to dreams at all. Halacha is halacha, and dreams don't make any difference. Like we said, Shalos HaTshuvas Min HaShamayim is irrelevant. It doesn't make a difference in our system of halacha. However, he says, when you're talking about a person who's excommunicated in a dream, or somebody who in a dream they come to you and say, you're in real danger and God is angry at you, well, you really better figure out what to do. The same on Shabbos, we would be Mechal Shabbos for somebody whose life is possibly in danger. We don't take chances when it comes to life and death matters. Well, so too, he says, when it comes over here to a dream which has perhaps life-threatening consequences, we have to be very careful, and that's something that we do have to take seriously, even though in the general, broader context of halacha, it's something that we really would not pay attention to at all. There is a... The Tzitz Eliezer said somebody once, Rav Waldenberg, he was the Rav of Shari Tzedek, he passed away probably 10 years ago. So he pointed out that there was a couple who came to him, that the man had a dream that night that he had relations with his wife when she was a Nida, and he wanted to know how much tshuva he should do. And Rav Waldenberg said, it's not Rishkeit, what does that mean? So you had a dream about something? That doesn't mean you have to do tshuva and you should forget it and ignore it and move on with life. You have serious mental issues and don't worry about it. Don't get caught up on these kind of issues. So that's something that generally I think is very much accepted, that we don't assume that dreams really have weight in halacha, but when it comes to matters that are life and death, that are very dangerous, so then generally we would give it a little more attention. There is a responsum written by one of the Gedolim from Romania in the 1800s, where he writes also that there was a family that came to him. A woman said she had a dream every night that her mother or father was buried in a certain town and wanted to be moved to another town, whatever it was. Not to Eretz Yisrael, but they wanted the body to be moved somewhere else, and kept coming to her in a dream, and she was going crazy from the dream, and it kept coming, and she asked the Shaila to this Rav whether or not she's obligated to fulfill the request to go ahead and move the body. And he said, absolutely not. Al pi halacha, really, number one, you're not allowed to move a body from one city to another. That's not an upgrade. Only to Eretz Yisrael is an upgrade, so you're not really allowed to do that. But then he said the following. He said, perhaps, maybe if you're going to have such insanity from this and you're never going to be able to calm yourself down, he said, maybe that has a status of pikuach nefesh also, which is so interesting. And it's something, obviously, nowadays we take with a serious degree of seriousness. It's something that we all understand about psychological implications of what's going on in people's minds. Well, this is interesting that in the 1800s, one of the great poskim of the generation wrote that if somebody has a recurrent dream, and something that's making them really nervous and they can't function normally and it's really an impediment to them, maybe that has the status of pikuach nefesh and you would be able to do certain things in order to get around the issue of pikuach nefesh. So this is basically a little bit of an understanding into, number one, a little bit of an insight into dreams, but number two, to figure out what exactly the relevance of dreams is in halacha as far as we're concerned. I just want to close with the following. I saw Rav Shlomo Amar, who was the former chief rabbi of He was the former Rav HaRashi, now he's the... I'm sorry, he was the former Rishon LeZion. Now he is the Rav of Yerushalayim. He's a beautiful writer. I happen to love all of his Svarim, his Shailos HaTshuvos and his Svarim on Chumash. He writes very beautifully. He speaks beautifully. If you ever have a chance, you should listen to him. So he writes a little bit of a perspective. I took from a few pieces of his on Chumash. I just put them together here. Obviously, we don't have time to read the whole thing, but maybe I just want to bring a little bit of it to our attention. He writes in the first paragraph that basically we all live in this world of physicality, and we're not going to start reading until the second paragraph, which is on the other side of the page. So he writes, we all live in this world of physicality, and he said it's really an olam hadimyon. It's really, we're all living in one big bubble, in one big dream. The whole world is so delusional, it's so ephemeral, it's something that's not really here for the long term. We all know that our goal is not really for olam hazeh. We're all here like the psukim, like the chazal tell us. It's a prosda lefnei atraklin. All of this is just an entryway into the real life that we're going to be living one day. It's all just a fantasy. It's a hallucination of sorts. And he points out the following insight. To me, I thought this was a beautiful read in the pasuk. You look at the next paragraph. V'zesha amar David HaMelech, alav ha-shalom. Listen to an incredible pshat. We say in Tehillim, B'shuv Hashem Ashivas Tzion, Hayinu Kecholmim. In the end of times, the Ribbono Shel Olam will take us back. When we go back to Eretz Yisrael, we will realize Hayinu Kecholmim. He explains what does it mean, Hainu? Ki la'asid, in the end of times, Navin, we will come to a deep understanding, ki bimei chayenu ba'olam hazeh, that all of our lives in olam hazeh, all of this life that we're all so busy trying to live as best as we can, Hayinu Kecholmim. The whole experience that we're all living now was just a dream. B'shuv Hashem Ashiv Asim, we're only going to notice it then. At the end of times, when life becomes clear to us, when God reveals himself, and all of a sudden we strip away everything that's in the way of us understanding of what God really is. But then we'll have an understanding and we'll realize that everything that we've been experiencing here was just a delusion, it was all a trance, it wasn't real. Ki rak az navincha olam hazehu kechalom mamish raku chalom arach. It happens to be a few thousand year old dream. But he says this whole world that we're experiencing and everything that we do, we have to remember it's just an alma de shikra. The whole world is not a real world. This is not really what the experience is supposed to be about. Umemela, now he says that's what it means in the next words in the pasuk, az yamale schok pinu. Then we're all going to laugh and we're going to smile. That what? Do you remember how upset you got that somebody did this to you? Do you remember how upset you were that your kid didn't listen to you? And you're going to realize what a joke it was. That's what you thought was important in life. And do you remember how happy you was when this happened to you and when you got that fortune, when you bought that car and this house? You're going to laugh at yourself and say, really? That's what excited me? Az yamale schok pinu. Then we're all going to sit and laugh at ourselves. That this was the dream that we were so caught up in, and this is something that we were so busy with. He goes on in another parsha to suggest, in the next paragraph, we're not going to read it, but he goes on to suggest that Yaakov Avin, I'm sorry, that in the in Paro, Melech Mitzrayim has the dream about the seven skinny cows and the seven fat cows. We'll see that in a few weeks, and the dream was interpreted to mean that there's going to be 7 years of good and 7 years of famine. So he goes, as a very good Svardi Darshan, so he goes on to suggest that maybe it's a reference to what the pasuk says, that yemesh no seina b'hem shivim shana, that the lifespan of a person is really 70 years. And he suggests that some people have a 70-year dream that's going to be like the seven fat cows. It's going to be 70 years of wonderful life, and everything's going to be great, and you think that you're accomplishing everything, and you think you're really doing wonderful things for the world. And some people, unfortunately, have the life, which is a life inflicted with difficulty and sorrow, seven years of skinny calves, 7 years of hard times. But he says, just remember, in the end of the day, everything is really just a dream. It's not reality. And this is not the life that we're really meant to be focusing on. Yes, obviously, this is the life that we have to live. So you'll say, it's a little bit discouraging to say that. You're going to say everything we're doing is just worthless, and everything that we're trying to accomplish has no meaning, no value. So let's just close what he has on yet another parasha. The last two lines on this page, I think, are beautiful. He talks about a reference to Yaakov Avinu when Yaakov has the dream, when he goes to sleep a few weeks ago in the parsha. Ulai lazek kiven Yaakov Avinu. Maybe this is what Yaakov Avinu means when he wakes up. What is his initial reaction? What's his response when he wakes up from that dream and he realizes that he had an encounter and experience with God? Achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. He explains Rav Amar, shagam b'makom hazeh, that even in this place, even in this world, which is all one big dream, so illusory, shehu olam hadimyon v'hatohu, it's such a confusing world with so much distraction, and we're not focused on what we're supposed to be focused on. Even there, says Yaakov Avinu, God put us here for a reason. And what is that reason? Gambo yesh kirvas elokim. Even in a life as fake as the life that so many of us live, we still have a job. We still have a job. And that job is to prove to the world that yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, that we can find godliness in everything that we do, that we can infuse the world with Kedusha, that we're able to bring Tahara to every experience that we have. And even though sometimes the world is very confusing and it is a big distraction, and it is hard for us to focus and really pay attention to what we're supposed to be paying attention to, but still, what we're told is, Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, this is the lesson that our ancestor, that Yaakov Avinu, teaches us. He tells us that don't forget about the fact that even though you're living here, you have a job to accomplish, and that job is always to prove to the world and to show everybody, Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, God's presence, to bring a little bit more of it, to make it a little more obvious than it was before we came into the world, to make it a little more potent, to make it more accessible to people. That's our job, and that's what we should all be able to accomplish. Amir Tashem next week.